Have you lost someone really important in your life? Or maybe you've gone through a big transition and you're really grieving the loss of the way things were, or the loss of a relationship, or the loss of your life and how it was before whatever happened to change it. Well, today we're going to be talking about the grief journey with our beautiful guest, Melissa Oatman, who has a new book coming out called Beautiful Mourning, A Guide to Life After Loss. Join us to find out more.
Soul Nectar Show, the Soul Nectar Show. You're invited, delighted to discover who you are. Anything is possible if you believe. So join us on this beautiful journey. Soul Nectar Show.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of Soul Nectar Show, that show where we talk about all things essence, where we gather around the campfire and we share our stories of connection with that which is greater than us, the great mystery beyond the veil, to those synchronistic moments that lead us inexorably towards a new understanding of ourselves, of life, of what we're doing here on this planet. And I'm your host, Carrie Hummingbird. I love having these conversations week after week, and talking with different people about their own journeys of self-discovery and about this life experience and how they've come across tools or techniques or information that might support the rest of us. And so in today's journey, we're really going to be focusing on the grief journey. We're going to be talking about how do you move on with your life after loss? How do you incorporate that? How do you make sense of it? And how do you kind of pick up the pieces and put things together in a new way? And I'm thinking about, I can't remember the name, Kitsuri, something like that, but there's a Japanese artist mode where you take the broken bits of pottery and then you actually put them back together with gold as the seams. And so there's like this creating really something beautiful in the destruction. And there's something that I am definitely familiar with, is that sense of loss. Because as a transformational messenger and teacher and guide, I'm constantly in the conversation of leaving behind what was in favor of what might be, in favor of the new potential. And so part of the transformational process is absolutely grieving the loss of what was and letting it go in whatever way feels appropriate, whatever way feels honoring, in order to leave space for something new to happen. And so we are always in the conversation of releasing the old and grieving the loss of that, even as we're joyful and we're anticipating and we're excited about what's next. There's always the balance of those energies. And so I'm excited today to have Melissa Oatman with us to have this conversation. Welcome, Melissa.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And it's really funny when you're talking about the Japanese pottery, that is the cover of my first book, Beautifully Broken, because I talk about that. I talk about how the old has to fall away, but you can be made even more beautiful than before, even though it's a really tough process. Sometimes the letting go and the transforming, it's messy, but in the end, you're more beautiful than ever before.
Yeah, I love that. I love that wisdom. And I know that you have a lot of experience as a healer, as a channeler, spiritual teacher, intuitive, and you've got your own podcast, which I have been on, Awaken Your Inner Awesomeness, which is all dedicated to exactly this kind of topic, improving our lives, deepening our spirituality. And yeah, your first book, Beautifully Broken, this guide to thriving after divorce or breakup. You've actually got another book coming out, and that's what we're going to focus on today, right, Melissa, is the beautiful mourning, and mourning in the sense of grieving, beautiful mourning, a guide to life after loss. And so that's going to be available on Amazon really soon, if it's not already at the time of this broadcast. So tell us a little bit more about yourself, Melissa, and your journey. I know that your first book was about your healing after your divorce, and you're a single mother of twins. So, you know, you've got a lot on your plate, as most moms do. And yet you've made this whole side of your life really powerful. Tell us about what inspired this current book that you're putting out now.
Well, right after COVID happened, I had a cycle in my life of about 4 years that things just kept happening. Like, I lost a lot of important people in my life. It started September of 2019 with my great aunt, who I grew up living next door to. So she was really more like my grandma than a great aunt. She used to babysit us and we were over at her house all the time. And she was older. So it's not like it was shocking. Well, it was shocking in the way it happened because she fell and hit her head. And so that was shocking, but she was older, you know, and so not as unexpected. But then it was February of 2020, my children's father committed suicide. And then that was their senior year of high school. And then right after that happened, you know, COVID hit. And so they had no prom. Graduation was completely different than it normally was. They were going off to college. And in June of that same year, my mom was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And so the book really is my whole journey of going through the loss. And it starts with every loss I've ever had, but what it taught me and what it felt like going through those things. But the main focus of my book is the journey that I was on with the loss of my mom, because it didn't just start when she died. It started when she was diagnosed and when we had to take care of her. And a lot of people will understand this, that role reversal when you're the children and now you're taking care of your parent. You know, she couldn't bathe herself or walk towards the end. And that was such a difficult thing to go through. And we ended up having to make the decision of turning off machines. It's such a difficult journey. And anyone who's ever been through it can tell you it's excruciating, but there's so many lessons in that journey. So the book is part my experience and what happened. And then it's also what I learned and what is the grief journey and how do we process it and how can we get through it with a little bit more grace and ease.
Wow, that sounds really powerful. And the caretaking of the elder parent, my husband's currently doing this with his father in a way, from a distance, but still we're getting closer to the time when we know that he's not going to be able to be independent anymore. So it's like that journey of supporting your elder through the realization that their life is coming to a closure and to help them come to peace with that and do it in a graceful way that is filled with gratitude rather than like a struggle and a fight. Yeah, I've sat by my grandmother's bedside as she died, and she died without forgiving some people in her life and was still really angry with them all the way up until the very end. And that's a really hard space to be with someone on that part of their journey, to see like how they're still struggling with things that really are irrelevant at this point because like you're passing. And then on the other side, I've seen my dad pass where he just like poofed out with a golden glitter ball of light, you know, just went poof, I'm out, you know, and in a really joyful way, like in a really heart-centered, grateful, complete, accepting way, just in a light way, like his passing was light, you know, and this other passing was very dense and heavy. So it's like really interesting as a spiritual coach to be guiding someone on their, somebody really important to you as well, on their final hours, their final months and days and hours.
Yeah. And I talk about this a lot in my book. It was hard for us because she was afraid of dying and we didn't want to ever believe that she was. And I know people are going to hear this and say, well, she had pancreatic cancer. What do you mean you didn't know? But honestly, when she was first diagnosed, they said, oh, we can do this modified Whipple surgery. You'll have chemo. It'll be okay. Like you have a tough diagnosis, but there's still a chance of survival. And after she had the surgery and she had her chemo, she rang the bell and they told her she was cancer-free. And we all celebrated and we thought, oh my gosh, she survived this. And it was a few months later that they found it had come back and they couldn't get it. The bottom line is, I believe that if she had had this disease at any other time other than when COVID was happening, we would probably be telling a different story right now. But I also believe in destiny and I believe that if it's our time to go, we go. So, you know, it is what it is, but it's very difficult when you're not really prepared for what's happening. And in our case, we didn't know what was happening in each stage. No one would tell us anything. And there was a point where I was in the hospital with my mom, and what had happened was she had her last round of chemo that she should not have had. And it caused major infection in her body, which sent her into sepsis. And we're in the hospital and no one had ever told us the time period. Nobody had said anything. We knew her body was starting to shut down though, because she was swelling. Her hands and feet were swelling. We knew something was wrong. And a doctor just came in and looked at her point blank and said, "I'm really worried about you. You may have 6 months left." And nobody had ever said anything to us up until that point. And this was part of my frustration, was with her care that she received at the hospital, because they're so blunt. They forget you're dealing with humans who have feelings. I had to sit there and watch her face as she realized this is it, you know? And she died a few days later, honestly, after that conversation. But I was so angry with the physician. How could you just bluntly blurt that out and not try to shield us, you know, protect us, say it in another way, be kinder? I don't know. But it was hurtful. It was devastating to hear. And because of COVID, I was the only person there with her, because only one person per day could go and see her. And it had to be the same person. So that was another added difficulty in our journey, was that we were hearing difficult news and having to make difficult decisions by ourselves. One day it would be my brother making that decision. The next day, my sister. Then it would be me. You feel so scared and alone. You really need a support team. And we just didn't really have that.
Yeah, that speaks to the compassion, you know, in the industry that you were talking about. And how, unless you've actually lost somebody that you particularly love, it doesn't matter. You could be a doctor and witness death all day long, but until you've lost someone that you actually love, you really don't have that deep compassion in your heart to offer somebody else. It feels like, you know, and that empathy training is something that I think they're realizing is necessary in the industry, but yeah, it's lacking. And then, so how do you cope with that? It seems like that was something that you feel instigated your mom in sort of giving up.
It did. I absolutely believe that. And I say that in my book. When someone tells you that there's no hope, if the soul loses its will to fight, then there's nothing left you can do. I mean, once she was resigned to that fact that, oh, I'm dying, there was not a fight left in her. And that's understandable. I think anyone else would do the same thing in that situation. And I think after listening to many hospice workers who I think have the most difficult but amazing job ever, I've heard many of them say, I wish more people understood what was happening to their loved ones' bodies so that they could let them actively die in a more peaceful way. Because so often we're fighting it and we're trying to help our loved ones get better. But what we're doing is prolonging their suffering. And most of us don't know that. We're not medical people. We don't have that knowledge. And oftentimes what it seems like is that hospitals just want to push people off onto hospice because they don't want to have to tell you. I don't think they know a lot of times. They don't know exactly how long you're going to have, but they don't want to be the ones to sit down and tell you what's going on. So they push that on to, well, just go to hospice, put them on hospice. That'll keep them comfortable. Oh, you can be on hospice for years. And then when you get there, then you realize we had no idea what was happening or what would happen. And I think that does such an injustice. But for me personally, I just felt so much anger after she died, because I felt like it was totally mishandled so many times. And that's one of the things I talk about in the book, is a lot of people feel like they shouldn't be angry after someone dies, and that it's not okay for them to feel those feelings. And my opinion on this is it's absolutely okay to be angry. And you have to work through that anger in order to get to a more beautiful place. But anger is necessary, and it's one of the stages of grief. It's so natural. You know, I was pissed at the entire world. You know, you took my mom away. I didn't understand it. It was devastating. I was angry, and I had to work through that anger to understand all of our emotions really boil down to love. I was angry because I didn't have my mom. And what I missed was her love. And I think what most people need to understand is you're going to go through every emotion there is, probably, maybe 100 times. You may feel like you've gone through one stage and you feel better, and then something happens and it triggers you right back into that stage. It's perfectly normal. That's so normal. And what I tried to help people understand is there are more healthy ways to move through grief, because we were kind of talking about this earlier. I had people in my life who just self-destructed after my mom passed away, because she was the glue that held our family together. And once she died, I had people in my family who were trying to find other ways to fill that void. And it was unhealthy ways, right? Alcohol, drugs, bad relationships. And it was hard to watch, because you want to just shake someone and say, stop it. Like, are you trying to kill yourself too, so you can go and be with her? Why are you doing this? And the hard thing is, everybody grieves differently, and you can't control anyone else, and you can't control how they grieve. So you sometimes just have to hold space for them and understand that their grief journey is their grief journey, that we all grieve in a different way. And it's really, really difficult sometimes. And for my mom, for example, she's the one that always, we got together, we would go to dinner, we would go to her house, and then that just fell away. So we were really close. And, you know, my sister and I would still get together, but the rest of my family, I didn't see. And I didn't see my aunts, her sisters, ever. I had to actually organize get together so that everybody could be together and take on that role, because otherwise it wouldn't have happened. So it can be a really confusing time and a painful time. But that's why I think it's so important to understand what the grief journey really is, and to have tools to help you work through it so that it's a little bit easier.
Yeah, I can totally resonate with what you're saying. I think what helped me a lot with my dad's passing was that I was psychic, right? So I am psychic. So I could hear him. I could actually feel his energy. He was quite happy. And I could hear him on his deathbed. He was like celebrating in a way that we used to celebrate around the Christmas table. Christmas and Thanksgiving and any other holiday he felt like it. We would hold hands around the table. And our prayer was that we would shout at the top of our lungs, grace. You know, it's a silly thing. But like, he was on his deathbed and I could hear it. He was shouting in my ear, grace, because we were all holding hands around his body. And I was like, oh my God, my dad wants us to shout grace. We can't do that in the hospital. Like, that's not appropriate. I said, we'll have to do that later, Dad. But it was something that I could hear and I could feel his joy. So I knew that he was okay. And he was beyond okay. He was happy. And he was free of what he started calling like this tight meat suit. Like, he was like, it's just so tight. I want to get out of this thing. And, you know, my mom and everybody else could, I think a couple of people heard it too, not as loudly as I did. But yeah, there were people that just were kind of trusting my sense of joy, you know, my sense of connection, because they didn't have it for themselves. And in the time following that passing of my dad is when really started seeing the role that he had been playing the whole time. Like, it became clear just how, like you said, your mom was the glue of the family. That became clear. My dad was this giant rock of unconditional love that we all gathered around. And when he was gone, it was like a crater, you know, and it was like, who's going to fill that spot? You know, and it is hard, and it places you in a decision point, because it's not going to be the same. It's never going to be the same without that person. But what we can do is we can step in to the role, and we can step in to fill a piece of it that feels authentic, and then build something new from that place as a co-creation.
Yeah. And exactly what you're saying with your dad celebrating, I knew the same thing for my mom. And that was one of the things that kept me going and that helped propel me forward, and which is why I wrote the book, was because I knew she was no longer in pain. I knew that she, you know, this body that had failed her, she was free of it. And I knew that she, even though here on earth, she may have been afraid of dying, I personally knew from also being a medium that there's nothing to fear and that you never die alone. And that was her worst fear, was that she was going to go to sleep by herself and that she would die in her sleep. And that didn't happen. We surrounded her. Everyone come to her to say goodbye that wanted to. She wasn't conscious. You know, they had her sedated, but I also knew that she heard people because she would make little eye movements and she would do things that I knew she was hearing us. And I knew that once she made that transition, it was just going to be so easy for her and joyful. And my grandma, her mom, was also helped raise us, had passed away just a year before her. And she missed her so much because she was like her right arm. And so I knew it's going to be fine because she's going to be running right to my grandma and she'll take over. And after she passed, I had a reading with someone and she was like, oh, your mom just wants me to tell you how amazing she feels. And it's like she stepped out of clothes that didn't fit. And I was like, yeah, I knew that.
Yeah. And it's really time to go. You know, that's the other thing is like we hold on too long. It actually becomes, I don't know, it just goes downhill. It's just kind of worse. So it's better to let go in the right timing and with forgiveness and kind of, you know, wrap up our lives as we know it. And I feel like these tools are excellent for just any, you don't have to be dying to use these tools, right? Because we're in a, like, for example, I'm in a process of grieving the ending of being a full, like a full-time mom, right? Like I'm a stepmom right now, but I'm not really highly engaged in that role. And my own kids are grown, like they're 21 and 24. So like the ending of that, I've been grieving that for like the last several years. And the loss of that sort of family system that I wanted to create, or the, it could even be the dream that we wanted to create, the fantasy in my mind of the happy family, like that I had with my dad, you know, gathered around the table and everybody holding hands and laughing and joking. Like I wanted that back. So there's like a grieving of that loss of that part of my life, that dream that I experienced that my dad helped to create. And that, you know, I'm working to create, but it just hasn't manifested that way. So it's like letting go. And there is a grief process to that letting go and that evolution of self.
Yeah, there really is. And, you know, my first book was all about really the grief process of releasing from toxic relationships. And it was more a romantic thing. This book is about releasing from any situation that's causing you grief. I mean, we grieve all the time. It doesn't just have to be for the death of a person. You might lose a job or, you know, as you said, your family dynamic changes. And that does cause grief. I remember after my mom passed away, my kids went away to school. And the first Christmas, I'm decorating my tree by myself and feeling so sad because normally this was the thing that we did together. My mom used to make it a big deal. We would watch Christmas movies, listen to Christmas music. We would have hot chocolate and we would all decorate the tree together. And even when my kids were home, they really didn't want to do that. They wanted no part of that because to them, decorating the tree was work and they didn't like it. And like you, that was something I wanted. And that was something that I really wished for, was to have a little piece of, it's my childhood, right? To have a little piece of that nostalgia back. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to create this for myself. I put on my favorite Christmas album. I made myself some hot chocolate and I decorated the tree. You know, I could have sat there and been depressed and said, I'm not even putting up a tree. Why am I doing this? But I decided that we have a choice in life and we can either let it roll over us and decide that we're going to be a victim and it isn't fair. We're not going to have what we want. Or we can decide we're going to make the best of what we have. And sometimes that's all you can do. Sometimes you're just making that lemonade out of those lemons, right? You're trying your best. It's what you make it. And if you find yourself in that dynamic where the person who passed away was the one who was the glue that held the family together, do what I did. I just got everybody together. I said, we're getting together for Christmas. We're going to rent a hall and everyone's just going to bring a dish. And we did that. And it was really, really awesome. And it wouldn't have happened if nobody had stepped up and decided that, hey, we're going to continue this tradition.
Yeah, it's that opportunity for you to step in. And I remember when my dad left and I finally realized that it was an opportunity for me to heal the relationship with my mom, because we'd always used him as the go-between.
Yeah.
Yes. Like the one that solved everything and the one who could love us both and could listen to both of us rail. And then when we try to help us sort it out with each other, but we never knew how to just go direct with each other and sort it out. So when he wasn't there anymore, we had to make a choice, you know, do we want to continue this, our relationship this way, or do we want to actually work on building that bridge ourselves? And I feel like sometimes there's these soul agreements, these soul contracts where the person leaves because they know the only way that you'll go to the next part of your soul curriculum is if they're not there anymore to do it for you. So like you, they have to leave so that you can grow. And sometimes I feel like those things feel painful, but they are also opportunities for big growth and development of those muscles that we were counting on the other person to have for us. And as a result, another book later, Love is Fierce, Healing the Mother Wound, and a lot of in-depth work, like my mom and I, now we can talk about anything, which is, I never thought would be possible. We were kind of relegated to the, it's the weather and that, oh, that color is blue. You know, like that was our level of conversation we could have. And now we can talk about like literally anything. And that's a blessing. You know, it's really a blessing.
Yeah. I talk about in the book a lot that grief is a teacher. And it can be one of our greatest teachers. And there's always something to learn. And what I think is interesting is I also had an experience. I was in a grief group, and there was a woman in that group who had argued with her grandson right before he died, and they never resolved that. And so she was so just overwrought with regret and also anger because she was never able to have that closure, and that was the last conversation they had. So in the book, I also talk about just because your loved one has passed on, it doesn't mean you can't get closure. We can still have conversations with our loved ones, even when they're on the other side. We can still say what we need to say to them. You can write a letter to them. You can just physically talk out loud to them. I think people misunderstand and think that, well, when they're gone now, there's nothing I can do to heal that relationship. But I don't believe that's the case at all.
Yeah, it gives us an opportunity to also flex those psychic muscles, right? I mean, it gives us an opportunity to reach beyond what we think is reality and into a new way of communicating. I mean, if we really love that much and we want to resolve it, that's when we turn to mediums, and that's when we turn to the exploration of our own intuition and our own ability to listen and are getting outside the box and how we think this whole dimension works. And that in itself is a whole journey that can get initialized by your love for someone who's departed.
Mm-hmm. And I have a whole section in there about how to communicate with your loved ones and how to try to increase your own psychic abilities so that you can get signs from them, that you can, in my case, just like with you, when I lay down at night to go to sleep, I'll hear my mom like say my name, or I'll hear her voice. So I know it's signs from her that I'm here with you. I'm okay. It's okay to move on. So we can get those messages. And that's why I felt it was important to include that in there. Yes, you can go to mediums and that's great too, but you can also get your own signs yourself.
Yeah. And it's that opportunity to grow. And so I think, you know, moving through the entire process and getting familiar with it is also just really helpful for just regular transformational work, you know, because we're always going to be leaving behind something that we loved in order to embrace something new that we didn't even know we loved more, you know? So it's like, we got to keep moving through this, these cycles and these journeys and not get stuck anywhere. Cause that's where, you know, if we get stuck, that's kind of like the sign that we're avoiding something that needs to be released. We're avoiding a next lesson. We're avoiding an initiation when it feels like that stagnant, inertia, heavy, dense, stuck energy. And it's time to clean it up and move forward and with some forgiveness. Yeah. So you have practices in this book for like self-forgiveness and things like that. I mean,
yeah. So I have journaling exercises that you can do. I also mentioned different tools, as in the case of the woman who, you know, her grandson, she was very upset that in the way that he passed. One of the things that I recommend is writing a letter And an interesting thing that you can do is write it from the perspective of your loved one to you. What would they say to you? And the thing is, when they're on the other side, they're not going to say things to you like, I hate you. And why did you do that? You know, I think if they had an opportunity to say anything to you, it would be, I love you, or I'm sorry, or, you know, it's always, the messages are always loving. And at least that's what I've always seen. But I talk about other tools that you can use to help you work through grief. And the reason the tools are there is to help you work through those emotions. Because just as you said, if you don't work through them, they become stuck energy. And stuck energy in the body causes physical problems and emotional problems. But I talk about the effects that it has when you do not move through those emotions, and when you just allow yourself to stay in a place of whatever emotion it is, anger, sadness, all of those negative emotions, that it just doesn't do anything positive for you. And yes, it is okay to feel all of those things, and you will feel all of those things, but it's staying in that place that's not helping you.
Yeah, it's like letting yourself feel angry is a thing that a lot of people have a hard time with, because we were told not to be angry. But yeah, there is anger with it. There's anger. I mean, gosh, when I entered menopause, there was anger. You know, it's like I knew it's coming at some point. But, you know, the loss of a certain part of my beingness, right, is it does provoke anger. It provokes a sense of loss and loss of control. And, you know, my body's not the same as it was. So, I mean, all of these things we could be in a stage of grief over. And that's okay. It's okay to feel that way. And then, but not to hold on to it, but just to let it pass through and get to the other side of it authentically, like really genuinely authentically through it. And it can take a while, right? Like it's taken me a while to talk about my dad's passing without, like, you know, having a lot of emotion come up. And I don't know, it's been a long time since 2017. It's probably like 6 years. So, you know, it takes a while to talk about it without it, you know, really bringing me down to my knees. But I guess everyone's process, also what you're saying is everyone's process is unique. So don't like put yourself on some kind of timeline thinking, oh, well, okay, I'll get through the anger part in 3 months and then I'm on to this next part. Like,
it doesn't work that way. It'd be nice if it did, but no, it doesn't. And the thing is, I don't think you truly ever stop grieving for your loved one. You're always going to, but it gets easier and it gets better with each passing day. And you're going to have triggers. I was at my doctor's office a year after my mom passed, and they told me to look over my sheet, my contact info sheet, and make sure everything was okay. And she was my emergency contact. I saw it and I lost it and I started sobbing in the doctor's office, and I felt so stupid. I had to ask for Kleenex and tell them I needed to change my emergency contact. That happens. You know, even turning on the TV and seeing their username on your Netflix account, or getting a piece of mail or whatever, you're going to have that. It's going to happen. But with the tools and tips that you get in this book, you at least can work through it. And so maybe the first time you cry for 2 days, maybe the next time it happens, you only cry for 1 day. And then maybe you get to where you shed a little tear, but then you move on. That's the grieving process. There's no time limit. The stages of grief are not linear. You don't go through one and then get to the, some people skip stages completely. Some people go back and forth. It is messy. It is all over the place. And everyone is different. That's the thing about it. So you have to be patient with yourself when you go through this process.
Oh, I love that. I love that you said it's messy. It's messy, people. It's like life. It's messy. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for bringing this out into the world and sharing your wisdom and your heart and your vulnerable stories. And is there anything else you want to share with people before we conclude the episode?
I would just say, give yourself some grace. As we said, the grieving process is messy, but your life can look so much different 6 months from now, a year from now, than it does right now. So if you're in a place where you're feeling such despair, it gets easier. It will get better. Just take it one day at a time, one step at a time, one breath at a time.
Yeah. And keep breathing. Don't hold your breath. Yeah. Awesome. Check out Melissa's new book, Beautiful Mourning, Mourning. Did I say that correctly? Mourning. Mourning. A Guide to Life After Loss, and it's going to be available on Amazon and probably other places. Melissa Oatman, and check out her podcast, Awaken Your Inner Awesomeness. And yeah, so share this out, everyone, with anybody that you know that's lost, somebody that's a little bit stuck on it and having a hard time moving through the grief process. Maybe this book will help them. And here, we're going to give kisses. Would you like to join me as we give people kisses? Here they come, everybody. We love you. Thanks for being with us on Soul Nectar Show. Bye for now, everyone.
If you found even one gold nugget in this episode of Soul Nectar Show, will you do us a favor? Will you subscribe, like, and share this episode? Maybe even write a comment and let us know what you thought about it. We really, really want to engage with you at a much deeper level. Let's be part of community together. Have a great week, everyone. Bye for now. To dive in deeper to nourishing conversation, visit soulnectar.show.
Soul Nectar Show. Awaken, awaken. Soul Nectar Show. Take a sip from the drip of nectar from the source of who you are. Soul Nectar Show. Yeah, yeah.